Brian, welcome along to the Big Red Bench. Dan Casey here with you for the next hour on Cork's Good Times Red FM. A GA-centred first half of the show, but we will get to the football a little later on. And what an evening it is to be a Liverpool fan. Few things to tidy up. Munster narrowly losing out to Northampton on a scoreline of 34 points to 22. Also, Cork City getting the win over Treaty United earlier today, 2-1 out in Mayfield in the pre-season friendly. But to the hurling now, and tomorrow is a massive day for Sarsfields. There's been some buy-in from the local community and the wider Cork public. Johnny Crowley's side facing Athena of Dublin in the AIB All-Ireland Senior Hurling Club Championship in Croke Park. Ahead of the game, Roy has been speaking to the Stars sharpshooter Jack O'Connor about bouncing back from their county final heartbreak facing the Dublin side in the decider and the impact the final has had on the community in Riverstown and Glanmire.
Okay, I'm delighted to be joined by Sarsfield hurler Jack O'Connor, head of the AIB GAA All-Ireland Hurling Senior Club Championship Final, which takes place this coming Sunday, January 19th at Croke Park. 1:30 throw-in. It's between Sarsfield and Athena of Dublin. AIB are in their 34th year sponsoring the club championships and are proud once again to celebrate the players and wider communities that play such a pivotal role in sustaining the entertainment and passion of our national games. Jack, how are you, sir?
Everything's going good now.
What's the buzz like this week? I'd imagine you're all kind of rearing to go. I'd imagine the buzz in training and around the club is just mental this week.
Yeah, it's great. We were training on Sunday morning and there's loads of people around the club kind of putting up the bouncing and stuff, and even just around Glanmire in general, you know, around the shops and stuff, and seeing everyone kind of buying into the hype, I suppose, up for the final. So it's great to see it, yeah.
I'd imagine everywhere you go, people are stopping you, talking to you about the game and, I suppose, wishing you well and all that.
Yeah, even just going out to the shop or whatever you're doing kind of back home, and you kind of bump into someone and you just say, you know, best luck on the weekend or well done last week and stuff. So, yeah, it's great to kind of see that, and even just see the younger kids going around the place with the hurlies and stuff, you know, it's unreal.
Yeah, see all the kids around Glanmire with all the Sars jerseys and the jumpers on and getting very, very excited. I suppose, Jack, that's what it's all about really, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember when I was younger, when Sarah started kind of getting county finals every year, I was one of those kids as well, you know, running around the club with my hurley and my friends. And, you know, now I'm kind of on the other side of that and there's new kids coming through again. Like, so, you know, it's unreal to see just kind of seeing everyone just in the Sarah's gear, fucking around with the hurley and stuff. It's unreal.
Yeah, you've gone from one of those kids to being on the team that are now going to contest an All-Ireland final this coming Sunday. I mean, like, are you pinching yourself? Are you thinking, is this real at this point?
Yeah, it's crazy, to be honest with you. Yeah, I mean, before this kind of campaign started, you know, nobody would have thought we'd be here. We wouldn't have thought we'd be here. So just even to be here, it is a bit of a surreal moment, right? And I suppose even on Sunday when we get to Croke Park, it'll probably kind of, it will sink in properly then. And yeah, I suppose, look, we'll deal with that on Sunday, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, like, for you as a club, I mean, like, you've been through so much turmoil over the last couple of years with, I suppose, the pitch team being destroyed in the floods and losing some huge men along the way, like Teddy Mack and Jermaine Halley and Conor McCarthy. It's been quite a tough couple of years for Stars, Jack.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you know, we've had some difficult times as well with the club flooding and obviously the three people there who mentioned passing away, you know, but, you know, if anything, it kind of just made the whole kind of community of Glanmire stronger, to be honest with you, you know, since all that and, you know, all the kind of work that people have been putting in together. And even just in the last few weeks now with, you know, the kind of whole situation of getting to an Ireland final, you know, the kind of, it's just kind of getting stronger and stronger, really, that kind of sense of community. So, look, there were difficult times, but we got through them now and, you know, we're on the other side of things now and, look, everyone's looking forward to Sunday, I suppose.
Yeah, it's been a kind of a whirlwind year for you, I guess. I mean, like, take us back, I suppose, throughout the course of the year, as you were saying, Jack, like, you didn't expect to be in this position at the start of the year. I mean, like, heading into the year, what was, I suppose, the expectation?
I suppose just in terms of the Cork Championship, I mean, every year you'd kind of go into with the expectation of getting to a county final or winning a county final, you know. I suppose in terms of the Munster Championship, that's kind of a different thing altogether. We just sat down with each other after the county final and said, look, we kind of more or less have a free pass here really going into the Munster Championship, you know, no one is going to expect anything of us really, you know, there's no pressure on us, so we're just going to have a go off it really and see where it takes us. And I suppose here we are now, kind of preparing for the All Ireland final on Sunday.
Yeah, and I suppose like losing a county final is always heartbreaking. And you mentioned there, you just kind of had a chat. Like, how do you bounce back after that defeat to McKinley? I mean, like, it was obviously heartbreaking to lose that final. But what did you say to yourself? Say, look, lads, come on, we have a chance here now again of going on and winning Munster.
Yeah, exactly. Look, it's always difficult after losing a county final. Those 3 days, you know, you kind of you get all those kind of negative thoughts about, you know, here we go again and stuff. But no, look, we went back training on that Saturday, and it was a tough training session. And we just, like I said, we just kind of all just agreed, look, we just give this a go here now and see where it goes. And I suppose here we are now.
Yeah, it certainly paid off. I mean, like, people would see this as I suppose the Munster Championship then as bonus territory, but I'd imagine you didn't see it like that. You saw this as kind of a chance to redeem yourselves.
Yeah. I suppose looking into it, obviously last year losing to Ballygunner by 17 points, you know, we didn't really feel we'd done ourselves justice that day. You know, we left a good few opportunities behind us, and they obviously we gave away a soft goal in the first half, and yeah, look, they obviously took over in the second half, but we looked back and we thought, you know, we didn't do ourselves justice. So going into that game, we were just kind of like, look, the shackles are off here now. I think we were ranked outsiders completely, so there was no expectation at all. And we just said we'd have a cut off it and see where it goes. And luckily we got that win, and same with the Slantania game as well, obviously.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. And just like, you had a 4-week layoff as well after the county final before you played Fecal. It was a long time to be, I suppose, hanging around, I'd imagine, was it?
Yeah, it was. In a way, it was probably a good thing, I suppose, because if you were to go straight back into it, let's say a week after or 2 weeks after, you know, you might still be carrying the weight of losing a county final with you into that game. Whereas with the 4-week break, you kind of, after the first week, you kind of got over it. And you kind of just turned your attention to the Fecal game with a kind of a totally new mindset, kind of a fresh approach to the whole thing. So it was probably good that way.
Yeah, and Johnny Crowley kind of freshened things up, I suppose, team-wise as well for that game. And it certainly had an effect.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, there's kind of some brave calls made by Johnny and the management. But look, as they always say, they do it for the benefit of the team. It's not personal or anything. You know, they do it to see where we can improve. But look, obviously, everyone has to play their part. It's not just about one player. It's about, you know, the 35, 36 lads who are in the panel. You know, that's why we have a panel, and that's why players have to come in and out, you know, when management's see fit, obviously.
That Ballygunner game, Jack, was just like, just such an incredible performance. As you said, like last year, beaten by 17 points by them. And this year, obviously, you beat them. It was an incredible performance. You were big underdogs heading into that game. They hadn't lost the Munster Championship in a few years. So, like, did that underdogs tag, I suppose, help you, I suppose, in the preparation for that game, that you were kind of able to go under the radar a bit?
Yeah, I suppose it did, to be honest. I mean, kind of, even going into the game, we weren't really thinking about winning or losing. We were just kind of focusing on, look, let's just bring, you know, our work ethic, our hard work, and see where we go. And obviously, with being ranked outsiders, like you said, you know, there was absolutely no expectation for us at all to get a result, or there's no pressure on us. So it probably did help us in a way.
Certainly did. And like, you got to a flying start. Your goal, was it after 4 minutes, really kind of set the tone for the day?
Yeah, I suppose when you're playing a team like Ballygunner or any team in general who are as good as that, you kind of have to have a good start and just kind of, you know, keep the foot in the pedal. So, look, we got a good start, to be fair. We just kept going, and hopefully we solved the game in a way.
And Shane O'Regan electric that day. It was a 2-3 he scored that day. He was unplayable that day.
Yeah, I'd say he's delighted with himself as well. Everyone is welcome to the club, to be fair, to come on and have an impact like that. You know, it was unbelievable. I'd say he couldn't believe in himself, to be honest, but it was great, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so Munster champions celebrations like were electric, I'd imagine. I suppose kind of a bit of the monkey off the back, I suppose, after losing the county title then.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, yeah, it was great. Kind of monkey off the back after losing the county final, because, you know, after losing a game like that, the county final, you know, you kind of obviously get all those kind of bad thoughts about, you know, are we that bad or kind of things like that. But look, obviously, that's not the case.
Yeah, exactly. But then you got over Ballygunner, which is just a massive mountain, massive hurdle to overcome. And you're saying to yourself, lads, we have a chance of winning an All-Ireland here.
I suppose we weren't. We didn't really look ahead of ourselves at all, to be honest. We kind of took each game as they came to us. We never looked past. Like when we played Fecal, we never looked past, you know, what the next game would be. And the same with Ballygunner, and the same with the Shrapnel game. We just kind of take what's in front of us and we deal with it then. And then obviously, whatever the result is after, we'll handle it that way then.
Yeah, that Slotnil game in St. Connell's Park, a tough day, tough game, and they're a very tricky opposition, Jack.
Very, in fairness to them, they're a great team. They're very physical, they're very fit. We were saying afterwards, you know, how much of a hard game it was. It took it all out of us, to be honest. You know, we were dead in our feet afterwards. And even going back to the clubhouse, you know, we were just kind of flat, almost like we just had no energy. But like that last minute there when that ball went over the bar, you know, we got that bit of luck, thankfully. And I mean, we've been on the other end of that kind of luck before, so at least this day now we were on the right side of it.
Yeah, that Cathal McCarthy point was just something else. The way it just floated over the bar was absolutely spectacular. Fantastic way to win it, I suppose.
Yeah, I was right behind him when he was holding it. I was kind of thinking, what's he going to do here now? And the next thing he threw and went over the bar. So, yeah, it was unbelievable score. I don't think much people can do that now, in fairness.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was 4 points you got that day. Aaron Myers got 5 points. So, like, you know, big scores from big players on the day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, sure. You kind of require everyone really to kind of put in their part. You know, obviously, some days it'll be me who gets the scores or Aaron the next day, but look, as long as every forward is putting in the work and creating those opportunities and getting those scores, that's all that matters, I suppose.
Yeah, then you're into the All-Ireland final. Is Christmas almost cancelled then for you because you've got the All-Ireland final a couple of weeks later?
No, not really. To be fair to management, they were actually enough for us. I mean, we were still training quite hard over it, but they gave us a few days to enjoy it with our friends and our family and stuff. So it wasn't too hectic, but they still were keeping an eye on us. So we got to enjoy our Christmas anyway, at least.
And that helps massively, I suppose, then heading into, I suppose, a tough training block of a couple of weeks heading up until Sunday's game.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's kind of, I'd say Johnny and the lads were all about just kind of keeping things fresh, really, because obviously there was a 5-week break from the semi-final to the final. So, you know, I don't think they wanted to go down the route of kind of going back into flagging us again. So they kind of gave us a bit of a break over Christmas, just to kind of stay fresh, really, is the main thing, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. And it is Nafina to come down Croke Park on Saturday, or Sunday, excuse me, which will be just an incredible occasion to face off, to represent, I suppose, your club in Croke Park. It would be just amazing running onto that pitch, Jack.
Yeah, exactly. Even just travelling to Croke Park, you know, with the lads, like, I've been playing hurling with some of them since I've been 4 years old. I went to school with them, you know, they've been my best friends since I can remember, and there's plenty of brothers and cousins and relatives on the team, you know, and just getting to go to Croke Park together like that after all these years, you know, it's something special to be fair.
And getting a big crowd up there, Jack, from Sars is going to be, like, there's going to be a huge crowd anyway, no doubt about that, from Sarsfields. But, like, that support is vital. I was at the Watergrass Hill game in Croke Park on Sunday, and just the support that they had, and down the last stretch, the last 5 minutes, it seemed to really lift the team. And you'll be hoping that the Sarsfields crowd can do the same again for you on Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully that's the case anyway. I think even just from listening to kind of people talking around the place, everyone seems to be travelling up to the game anyway. I think there's a few trains being booked out and stuff. So look, hopefully we see as much as people as we can off there.
Yeah, and with Watergrass Hill winning as well, it's a huge boost, I suppose, for hurling in the county. And I suppose it shows you that, look, Cork teams can go up there and win an All-Ireland. It's fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. They had a great win last week, in fairness. I suppose there was that kind of talk going around about, you know, no Cork team winning in All-Ireland in the club scene for quite a while. So, look, it's great for Watergrass Hill to kind of kick that off in a way. And, look, just credit them. They were great on the day.
Yeah, they were superb, yeah. Nafina now it is to come this coming Sunday. Have you seen much of them?
So, funny enough, actually, they hosted the Fela in 2012 when I was under 14.
Yeah.
So a lot of us actually stayed with those lads at the time. It's kind of a funny thing, really, all these years later, that we're playing them now again in Croke Park in the All-Ireland Club Final.
Is it a case though, Jack, that, like, you don't, like, not that you don't focus on the opposition, but it's more about yourselves and about what you can do on the day?
Yeah, pretty much. I suppose management are kind of taking care of, you know, Nafina, really. They're just kind of doing that themselves, and they're kind of telling us, you know, just focus on each other now and focus on your performance. Don't be worrying about anything else, really.
Mm. What are the nerve level like at this point, Jackie? Are you nervous or are you just excited for Sunday to come?
No, to be honest, I think I'm just excited, really. It's more of a wanting to just be Sunday now at 1:30, you know, just get on the pitch, kind of try not to burn too much energy thinking about it, you know, but they're good nerves, really, if anything, I suppose.
Yeah, and just once you win that first ball or get that first point, your nerves will be completely settled in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
absolutely fantastic. Come here, boy. Very, very best of luck on Sunday. You'll have all of Cork behind you, and fingers crossed you can do it, bring it back home to Cork.
Thanks, Rory.
Yeah, all the best of luck to everyone involved in SARS. Time to hear from the enemy camp now. And here's Nafina's Sean Murphy speaking to Alana Conan ahead of their AIB All-Ireland Club Hurling Final against SARS.
I'm delighted to be joined by Nafina hurler Sean Murphy ahead of the AIB GA All-Ireland Hurling Senior Club Championship Final, which takes place this Sunday, January 19th at Croke Park from 1:30pm between Nafina from Dublin and Sarsfields of Cork. AIB are in their 34th year sponsoring the club championships and is proud to once again celebrate the players and wider communities that play such a pivotal role in sustaining the entertainment and passion of our national games. So we're closing in on the D-Day now at this stage. Can you feel the hype building?
Hi Alana, how's it going? Yeah, we're all looking forward to it now. Only a couple of days to go now, and yeah, we're all very excited.
And even walking around, I can see all the flags. I'm living there myself. What does the week look like for you? Is it business as usual as much as possible, or do you take in that bit of excitement as well?
Yeah, no, it's business as usual, really. We have the task ahead now, so we're focusing on Sunday. But I live locally around Drumcondra as well, and it's nice to see all the flags and bunting around the area at the same time too. Yeah, it builds the hype nicely.
And I see lots of, I suppose, chat about it in the build-up and pre-match panels and everything and all the rest. Do you get that bit of, I suppose, build-up on the ground, living locally, as you say, that you do have? I'm sure there's plenty of kids floating about as well.
It's nice to see the blue and yellow around the place, of course, in Nafina, but from a team perspective, not really. We're very much kind of focused in on, as I said, the task at hand, which is just being able to go out and put a performance in on Sunday and try and play to our potential and take it from there, really, yeah.
And do you have any superstitions in the build-up to a final week like this?
Personally, no, I don't. A couple of the lads might have a few superstitions, all right, but no, stick together for the week. Try not to change anything. You know, it's another game. It might be a huge game, but just stick to the process. Yeah, and put the shoulders together and move forward.
Speaking of that, sticking to the process, Sean. Obviously, during the build-up, you have Christmas right there in the middle of it all. How does that kind of work out for you guys?
Yeah, probably something that's, you know, very rare to have to have Christmas in the middle of a championship campaign. But it was nice, you know, we had a couple of days to head off with family and to enjoy the few days, and then we regrouped shortly after, and it was business as usual really after that. But yeah, no, nice to get some downtime and then regroup.
How quickly is shortly afterwards? Is it 2 or 3 days afterwards kind of thing, or did you get more so kind of like a week off?
Something like that, yeah, a couple of days. So we would have closed off the year, say, together, and then a few days after Christmas we would have regrouped. So yeah, a couple of days in the middle there.
Nice. And having got over the hurdle, obviously, of the first Dublin Senior Hurling Championship in 2023, you did the same again in 2024 and lost the two previous finals to Kilmaco Crokes. Was it any sense of sort of a change in tide for you guys, that once it did kind of swing your way, that now you have the momentum in that?
Kind of, yeah. It was really a case of just belief. You know, we had proven that we could compete at the top level in Dublin, losing out to, you know, a very talented Croke side, and then kind of a testament to the group, really, and to our drive and motivation that we kept coming back and kept knocking on the door. And then I guess the Leinster run that came last year and the Leinster run this year as well were just, you know, an added bonus to all the work that we had put in, and again, just proving that we can compete at the top level.
And then obviously having such stiff competition in that Dublin competition itself, and then having to move on to Leinster, obviously you have that rivalry with Kilmacud. What would you say your most difficult matchup to date was this year?
Each game brings its own challenge, really, you know, because these are teams you wouldn't often play against each other. You alluded to Crokes there, of course. We play them a couple of times a year, be it in the league or be it in group stages and championship. So yeah, each game was a different challenge in different ways, of course. And I guess we're just grateful to have gotten over each game so far. And now we have one more ahead of us, and we're solely focused on that. And hopefully on Sunday then, after the game, we'll be able to reflect back on what was a great year.
Do you limit your reflections to that sort of time period, Sean? Because obviously, like, if you let it creep in before that, maybe you're kind of getting ahead of yourself that way.
Yeah. So like, you really focus on, you know, the week ahead of you, the next game that's ahead of you. You never try to look beyond that, and equally you never look backwards as far either. You just focus on the task at hand, be it, you know, a Dublin final, a Leinster final, or in this case, an All-Ireland final. We have, you know, one job to do on Sunday. That's what we're focused on, and that's what we're building towards. So yeah, as I said, after the game, then hopefully we'll be being able to look back on what was a great year, and then we can dissect the year after that.
All of a sudden, though, it's funny how quickly things can change. As I say, getting over that hurdle of the Dublin final, and then all of a sudden it's Leinster and it's on again. Have you taken a moment as a group to kind of reflect on that and see how far that you have come, even to date, getting here?
Not really, I would say. You kind of park each success as you go, because it's such a quick turnaround between games once you get out of Dublin and even inside Dublin. Once you leave that championship, it's, you know, nearly week in, week out, there's a new team or a new match that's coming on. So, no, you kind of just take each game as it comes and then plan towards the next one, yeah.
And who would you say your top performers so far this year have been?
For Na Fianna?
Yeah.
Everyone. Everyone has been putting in a great shift so far, yeah. Be that in training or be that in matches as well, yeah. A great team effort so far.
Yeah, obviously there's a few kind of hard to ignore, racking up the scores, and obviously your attack and threat has been much talked about. But you've a nice blend of youth and experience too. I know even Kieran Stacey, let's say, to Liam Rush. How does that kind of stand out for you? Because it is something that's to your credit and strength as well.
Yeah, I suppose your name, Kieran Stacey, there probably has been one of our standouts. If I was to name someone individually, he's having a great year. You know, he's a great fella as well. He's a great teammate. So we're delighted to see him, producing the performances that he has been doing. And looking forward to Sunday and seeing what he can do.
I was reading an article there recently that was talking about the origins of the hurling side of the club and how it came after the football side, let's say. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to be a dual club, and not just a dual club, but both sides are competing at such a high level?
Yeah, it's great. Like the hurlers support the footballers and the footballers support the hurlers. And there's a couple of people who are involved in both teams. And like, fair play to those lads and to those women who can do both. But yeah, look, it's a feeling of support between both teams. And the footballers had success, you know, in the early 2000s in Dublin and Leinster and got to an All-Ireland final. So it's nice that it's come around to the hurlers now this time. And we have the full support of all teams in the club with us.
Does it kind of give you that extra backing that it is paying off now? Because as I mentioned, like, it did start after the football, and I suppose maybe there was that bit of development that had to go on there.
Yeah, definitely. It's nice to see the work pay off. I've been with this team now for a good few years and been there through, you know, the less successful times, if you want to put it that way. You know, the season might be over at the end of summer if you weren't getting past the group stages. Whereas if you look at the last 4 or 5 years, we're hurling right up until Halloween nearly. So yeah, it's a lot of work done by, you know, all the mentors in the club from underage, you know, from under 12 right the way through to senior, through all the minor teams. It's kind of an accumulation of all that volunteer work and good effort put in by everyone in the club.
And what would you say is Sarsfield's biggest transfer?
Sarsfield's are a brilliant team. They're going to give us, another challenge. We've had different challenges in each game so far. And we respect them totally, and we're looking forward to seeing what they can bring on Sunday.
Have you been keeping an eye? I'm sure you have. The post-match analysis has had to be done at this stage.
Yeah, we have indeed. Like, as everyone has, you know, we see what everyone else sees, and they've been putting some great performances in, and fair play for them. You know, they're a really great side, and really looking forward to the challenge that they're going to bring on Sunday.
Would you have any notion as to who you feel is the favourite for the weekend?
No, I just know that we're focused on performing on Sunday. So we're going to bring the right attitude and just try to play to our potential. And hopefully that'll get us over the line on Sunday.
Fair. I said I'd throw it out there anyways and see.
No.
And then finally, what would it mean for you guys to come home as the All-Ireland champions come Sunday evening?
It would just be fantastic, really. It would be, you know, a shout out to the club, really, for the years and years of volunteer work that's gone into the underage setup. You know, we've had success with nearly every age group, minor, 21s, underage. We've had success at senior now for the last few years. So it'd be nice to bring back an All-Ireland trophy to pay thanks to everyone who's chipped in over the years.
You'll have to bring it round everybody's houses and the schools and all that then.
Yeah, I'll leave that to the other lads, but yeah, that would be fantastic.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thanks so much anyway, Sean, and best of luck.
Cheers, Alana. Thank you.
Sean Murphy of Na Fianna there taking on Sarsfield's course in the AIB All-Ireland Club Championship Senior Hurling Final tomorrow in Croker. Best luck to everyone involved in Sarsfield's. Now, keeping with the hurling during the week, it was an honour to be asked at the launch of Lake Regale, the TG4 documentary series in which we see our favourite GAA heroes away from the pitch. The mighty Newtown Shandrum duo of Ben and Jerry O'Connor announces taking part in one of the 8-part series launching next week on January the 23rd, starting with Paddy Maher of Tip. There was no sign of Jerry, but was a pleasure to catch up with Cork hurling legend Ben at the launch. 20 years ago, lifting Liam McCarthy up in the Hogan stand, did you think it would be at least that long before Cork hurling would get to lift another one?
Sure, never think that, then. I was just saying to some of the lads there around, like, 90 Cork done the double, and we didn't win it until 99 again, and that was a long time for Cork at the time. That was a famine, they said at the time. Now we're twice that in a couple of years, we should again, like, so. Cork badly needs an All-Ireland, and I know the counties do too, but, like, we've proud hurling tradition, and 20 years is too long for us to be waiting for.
I mean, it's probably so hard to pinpoint one thing anyway, but where do you think it went wrong?
Yeah, I suppose things just got very even. All the other counties upped their games. And I suppose maybe, look, maybe they were in before, like, we were, Cork were probably used having players coming through all the time. And maybe other counties were getting their underage game in order. And maybe we were a little bit slow on that. But I think, look, about 15 years ago, Cork started getting more involved in the underage, pushing the underage. I think now them fellas are starting to come through, so I think now that's making a difference. We're competitive for minor again, we're competitive for under 20. So hopefully going forward that's going to send us, but big difference now when, compared to 20 years ago, a 19-year-old had a chance of playing senior. Now there's very few 19-year-olds come out and play senior at that age. They need maybe 22 or 23. So, but I think Pat has a settled squad at the moment. There's a lot of them around 26, 27, 28, so they should be in their prime. I thought we were a little bit unlucky last year to get out of Munster. I thought we were a little bit unlucky then after that. So hopefully the experience will send to the lads, and that that'll drive them on to see, like, what it meant to Cork people last year, even when we were beef, what it meant to them. Hopefully that'll drive them on this year to go a step further.
I mean, you know these guys incredibly well. Do you think the likes of Michael Mullins and Ben Cunningham are going to be the guys to drive this team into an All-Ireland?
Yeah, they'll have to be. They'll have to be looked at. And I've seen them fellas training, like, so if they're not making the team, there must be some other fella inside there doing something special altogether, because I know these fellas, they're not happy to be a number. They want to be on that starting team. And so, look, if you have number 36 in your panel, and if he's going home at night thinking, I'm going as hard as I can here, I'm doing as good as I can, and I'm still not getting a look at, that's only good for Cork hurling. It's the fella that's going home at 35, number 35 and 36, and say, I might not. Well, if you're going by Ben Cunningham, Micheál Mullins, these fellas are driving to get on the starting 15. They don't want to be a panel member just for the sake of it.
Bit of a lighter one. Out of the players you played with, who were the top three Cork hurlers of all time?
Yeah, it's just a tough one. Put on the spot there.
You can leave out your brother as well.
Yeah, I suppose, look, if I had to go, you have to put Corn in there anyway. Wayne Sherlock, and I suppose Tom Kinney. And that's been harsh on a lot of other good fellas, like, but they'd have to be three of the top ones I played with.
Lastly, 20 years since the last one, do you think, ironically, we could see the two Downey brothers, Rob and Owen, lifting Liam McCarthy in the Hogan stand this year?
To be unreal. Hopefully, look, as a Cork man, I'm not interested in anyone else winning anything on it. Cork, even if someone has tiddlywinks, I want Cork to be winning that. Like, so hopefully, come the end of the championship, the two boys are above the Hogan stand and an ear of the Liam McCarthy cut each.
Pure Cork wouldn't let them win the coin toss. Don't mind anything else. Great stuff from Ben, a man intertwined in the fabric of Cork hurling, currently in charge of the Charleville Intermediate team. And it was also great to catch up with 11-time All-Ireland winner and proud Corkonian Breed Stack at the event. Breed, over your storied career, what's been the highlight for yourself?
It's actually funny. I feel like I've lived a couple of different lives, but you know, something like the Lake Regale just really takes it back to where it all started. So there's been sure too many games, and thankfully we were involved in a lot of successful ones. But to see where it started in 2004 and where it ended, I suppose, when I finished in 2016-17 was just a roller coaster, and was just so proud and privileged to be part of it all.
You're here with your dad. What does he make of it all?
He's happy for the day out, I'd say. He's filling his bag with sandwiches there. So, sure, like, Dad loved it. Like, Dad is the reason I got into it in the first place. You know, Dad is our local pre-vida, and sure started us all off in school, playing school leagues and, you know, playing with the boys. And he brought me up to play with the local boys team that were under 12 and under 14. And then, I suppose, yeah, like, just got me involved. Carted us all over the country, like all parents, good parents do in Ireland, and helped us stick with it, gave us discipline, and sure, like, they had as many good days out as we did. They made friends for life with all the girls' parents, and it's lovely to see the joy that it brought them too.
Is LGFA in trouble at the moment in regards to the AFLW, because Kayleigh Cronin's gone now, and all these stars that we build up in the LGFA, they're seeing the professional contract there, and they're leaving. Is that going to be an issue, do you think?
Well, I think, look, it's probably been an issue for a couple of years. It's probably coming to a head all right at the moment. Like, there's close to 40 players over there now, a lot of which are key stars. And like you mentioned, like Kayleigh, I suppose, if you can imagine taking 40 of the best players out of the men's game, it would diminish the men's game massively. And I know, like, for any young boy or young girl going to matches, they want to see the best players. They want to see the likes of the Vicky Wall, the Kayleigh Cronin, like you say. So, it's a very, very tough position for the LGFA at the moment. But it's a very, I suppose, appealing contract as well that comes from Australia. And it's a lifestyle. It's not just kind of, I suppose, that you're going over playing. It's a complete lifestyle change. And I suppose girls see that if they're being offered a contract to do that for a couple of years, how wonderful it is. And they've seen people do it probably for many years. But I can tell you now, there is nothing like playing for, I suppose, your club and your local county. And I couldn't imagine, if I was offered that position when I was playing at Cork, I couldn't imagine leaving it. But that's easy to say, because that's very easy to say when you're part of a successful team, you know. So
I guess a sport is only as ever as big as its stars anyway. Do you think there's more that can be done for the LGFA to keep these players here?
Well, I suppose, look, that probably remains to be seen in the coming years if there's this amalgamation that comes true. And look, we're hoping that, you know, that will probably bring more security, more resources, more financial backing to LGFA. Maybe it is a case of maybe just making sure that players are looked after, and that all of that side of things isn't even a second thought for them. But it's a very hard pie in the sky thing to say that will this fix the LGFA problem at the moment. It won't. But what's happening, I suppose, in Australia is that the academies are churning out, you know, massive amounts of players as well. So do I see that there'd be a massive need for all the Irish players in the next couple of years? I think it might plateau, to be honest. Just like in the men's game, though, there will always be a need for Irish players in Australia. But I don't know, will it reach the peaks of, kind of, will it keep going in the trajectory that it's going? So there could be a little bit of weathering the storm, but there's certainly an element that players probably need to be looked after a little bit better here.
Did the amalgamation, do you see that as a good thing?
Look, it can only be a good thing. I suppose my only experience of it was probably over in Australia, where the AFLW is under the AFL, and just the level of resources that you're exposed to, the level of care, everything, it is exemplary. And it certainly it has made the AFLW grow exponentially over there in very short space of time. And players are very, very comfortable, and probably feel that they have more power and more bargaining chips as well in their pocket, which can only be a good thing, I suppose, for the players that are involved.
Great stuff. Thanks so much. Really appreciate it. Yeah, brilliant stuff from Breed. As always, you can catch the Laker Gales of Ben and Jerry O'Connor and Breed Stack in the coming weeks on TG Carr. Episodes airing from next week every Thursday. And the ref's whistle has gone for half time. Stay with us as we go into the football in the second half.
On Red FM.
The Big Red Bench.
Cork's Good Times.
Red FM.
Yeah, welcome back to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Good Times, Red FM. Dan Casey here with you for the next 20 minutes or so. We looked at the GA, and we looked at it again in a small bit, but now it's time to quickly look at the soccer.
Trent Alexander on the ball, and Darwin Nunez! What a time! What a time to step up for Liverpool, for Darwin Nunez!
Brilliant run by
Sam. Liverpool have flung bodies forward here.
That was, of course, the Sky Sports audio of Liverpool breaking Brentford hearts with a late 2-0 in the Premier League this afternoon. Ryan Bramalow has the full-time report from the GTEC Community Stadium.
Full-time, Brentford 0, Liverpool 2. Liverpool have snatched it at the death. Darwin Nunes, who scored 11 goals in 9 months, has produced two vital ones here. He latched onto the end of Alexander-Arnold's low cross in stoppage time and then smashed home another 2 minutes afterwards. It's a performance of a cult hero that sends Liverpool flying high at the top. The final score, Brentford 0, Liverpool 2.
Yeah, great to see Nunes getting the brace after all the stick he does get online. But Arsenal lead Aston Villa 1-0 at halftime in their fixture in the final game of the day in the Premier League. Nigel Bidmead has the latest from Villa Park.
Arsenal 1, Aston Villa 0. Gabriel Martinelli's 7th goal of the season separates the sides. It came on 35, Leandro Trossard crossed from the left and Martinelli stabbed it goalwards. Emi Martinez in the Villa goal clawed it out, but it had already crossed the line. 4 minutes later, Trossard had a chance to double the lead after good work from Martinelli, but he smashed it over the crossbar. Villa are playing on the break, but too often, lone striker Ollie Watkins has lacked support. Arsenal 1, Villa 0.
Yeah, things are certainly getting interesting in the Premier League. Now, earlier in the week, Kathleen McNamee of OTB got up with Carla Rowe of Dublin LGFA. Enjoy.
Carla, you're very welcome to Dublin. How are you feeling today?
Excited, yeah, looking forward to it. I think the Irish have been unbelievable since I've got here a couple of days ago. So, yeah, I'm very excited to say the least.
What is it about this project in particular that kind of enticed you? Because you did say once you left Aston Villa that international job was something you'd be interested in, but the Irish project?
Irish projects, I think if you look at all the projects I've entered, you know, trying to maximise the potential of a group of players that have got a willingness and a passion to get to a World Cup. And I think for me, I want to get to a World Cup. I'd love to take Ireland to a World Cup. And yeah, it was a perfect opportunity for me.
And you had the experience with the US Women's National Team during the summer. What did that teach you, I suppose, about international coaching?
Yeah, it was interesting. I've been asked that a few times and I think it's, you know, how to simplify it, how to get a message across because you have limited time on the grass. So that was really important, how you can continue to get those messages in. So yeah, look, I took an awful lot and I will continue to take an awful lot from Emma as well.
I thought it was really interesting you were saying in the press conference about the importance of getting on the ground, seeing players, whether it's England, but also over here, and making sure that players know that your team is accessible and you want them to be able to come to you or to see the young talent. How do you see that working for you?
Yeah, I think, look, first and foremost, the camp's around the corner, so the focus right this moment is going to have to be Camp 1 and what we've got available. But, you know, the League of Ireland hasn't started now until March, so the idea will be to get into clubs, have a look at them. We're going to be back and forth. We've got a very strong staffing group that will make sure that we've got eyes across everything and everywhere, because that's going to be really important, particularly for the future of the Irish squad and the Irish game.
And where the squad is at the moment, it's obviously a disappointing couple of months. They're going to need a lift. It's perhaps not the most exciting of games compared to some of the ones that they have played in the last year. So obviously exciting for you and exciting to see a new era coming in. But how do you plan on going about, I suppose, bringing everyone back together and bringing that excitement back to the squad?
Yeah, look, I think when you meet Marnie as well, he's quite similar to me. We're quite a lot of energy. We like to do things with our smile on our face. We have to just remind them why they love playing for Ireland, because this group of players loves playing for their country. So it's reminding them of that. And also getting, I think when new ideas come in, naturally people step up. Everyone wants a shirt. So it doesn't matter who it is, whether it's Turkey, the US, England, you know, everyone I have absolutely no doubt will step up.
And in terms of the team that you have there, Alman Emma Byrne as well, who is obviously a legend of the WSL, what are you most excited about for working with the two of them?
I think just experience. You know, they have different qualities. I think between the entire staffing group, we have different qualities. So, yeah, look, Emma's great. I've worked with her at Sky as well, and we have a really good, you know, bond and a good time. And I think Marnie is just someone that we've bounced off for many, many years. I think he's an exceptional coach. I mean, everybody knows in England he's arguably one of the best coaches, and the fact that he's Irish from Dublin and played for the Republic of Ireland is huge.
And looking at the games that are coming up, Turkey first and then over to Koper in Slovenia, there's a little bit of a leadership gap in the team with the retirements of Nifahi and Diane Caldwell. Lots of exciting players to jump in there too. The question's always going to be about who is going to start in that attack, how it's going to look. Yeah. What are some of the things that you would like to bring to this team on the pure footballing side?
Yeah, I think just a way of playing. I think it'll be a different way of playing. I think it's different to what they've been used to. But when you talk about a leadership gap, it's an opportunity, right? An opportunity for players to step into those positions, step into those roles and give them that exposure. And I think that naturally breeds, a togetherness and a quality where, you know, players stepping up when they probably have left it to others. So, yeah, look, it's an opportunity is what I would say.
There's lots of young exciting players in the squad too who are maybe not getting quite the chance at the moment that we hoped they would. Are you looking forward to working with them, bringing through, thinking of Erin McLaughlin, got her start there the other night, Abby Larkin as well, Jessie Stapleton, they've all kind of stood up for Ireland in the last while.
Yeah, you've got some good quality, and Tara Hanlon as well, Jessie Stapleton, you've got some good quality youngsters, and I've already spoke to both their managers in the last 24 hours and I'll be trying to get into club to see them as much as possible. So these are all players that we have to keep our eyes on, make sure that we're looking not just at them but working with them, with their clubs, to make sure that we're continuing to develop them, because like I said, that's going to be hugely important.
And in terms of your own coaching development, you're currently doing your pro license. Where are you on that?
So it actually starts this month, but I'm missing the first block because of this period. But yeah,
we won't tell your teachers.
I know, I don't think they know actually after last night. So yeah, it'll be next month, end of February, after the next camp that we started. But yeah, can't wait to get going on that.
And you said as well earlier about how much you love getting into a group of players, really cementing yourself in there, but also building those bonds. How do you normally go about that?
I think understanding people, understanding how we get the best out of them, understanding what makes them tick, how we can help them as people, and I think that's really important. I think with anything in life, right, whether it's football, business, life, I think you have to understand the why, and I think they need to feel that we're going to help them and do anything for them and run through brick walls for them.
And we've seen how well Julianne Russell has integrated into the camp alongside Baby Rosie, of course, who kind of became the hero of Irish football last year, and you have your own experiences of being a mother in football. Can you talk a little bit about that and just what supports, I suppose, you want to add on to? Because I know there was a lot of supports put in place by the FAI.
Yeah, I want to continue that for Julianne, and I reached out to her last night to talk mum to mum, really, and just to ensure her that, I'm fully on board with that, and also Rosie needs to introduce my little girl to the squad, so so that helps. But I think we have to help mums in the best possible way. I know how challenging it is, how difficult it is, so in any which way you can help mums or those wanting to be mums, I think that's also important. So it's best job in the world, right? Yeah. So it's important.
Yeah, it's not exactly a binary at all, especially in the modern day and age. And in terms of where this squad are now, I think there's probably a bit of a feeling that since we didn't beat Wales, that World Cup qualification feels very far away and very difficult, maybe compared to what the Euros qualification route was. What would you like to say to fans who are sitting at home thinking that at the moment?
We've got to break it down, right? So we've got six games coming up before June, and we have to win those games to make sure we qualify out of the Nations League. So you have to look at it now. We can't think about the World Cup. We've got to think about that moment, and then you build on from there. And I think that you have to really zoom in on the here and the now rather than looking too far ahead.
And any other just general messages that you'd like to send to the fans about what to expect from the Carl Awards tenure?
A passionate, fun energy. I think anyone that knows me or seen me at club, that's exactly what they'll get. But they'll get someone that wholeheartedly cares about individuals and wants to make sure that we look after people, and I'll be no different here.
That was, of course, Kathleen McNamee speaking to new Irish women's national team manager Carla Ward. Hopefully big things to come from that amazing side. Good news for Arsenal. They are now 2-0 to the good against Aston Villa. Now, at the unveiling press conference during the week of Carla Ward, there was plenty of Cork interest after Colin Healy's fairly damning statement during the week, basically saying, and I am summarising in my own words here, that he turned down the manager's position at Cove Ramblers due to the confidence that the FAI's Mark Canham, given that Colin would be able to continue working with the FAI. This ultimately led to a very interesting press conference in the midweek.
Mark, David, I don't know who's best to kind of take this, but can we hear the Colin Healy quotes today, and I suppose the question is, how did this happen? How did they bring you on one page and Mark was on another?
Yeah, I suppose I'll let Mark start and then I'll conclude if that's okay.
Yeah, first of all, just to say thanks and our gratitude for Colin for his efforts and commitment to the women's national team over the last period of time. We have huge respect for him as a person, as a coach. The decision we made to not renew Eileen's contract was purely a football decision, and that was the same with Colin's in terms of a football decision. All of my conversations before leading up to the final games against Wales and then after that, they were all confidential, and that's the plan to keep that in the way. It's not my intention today to share any of those details. It's not my style or our style as an association. It's important to remain confidential. Obviously, not in my control or our control that some of the elements of those conversations have been aired publicly. What I can say is I've been very consistent in all my conversations with Colin, his agent, and other people that have been involved in those conversations that the decision that we make on the renewal of the contract or non-renewal would be based on a review, which is very consistent to what we've done with other teams in the association with other head coaches. That's very consistent throughout that would be the case. And the staff and players were involved in that review, and it was always transparent that would be the case. And the decision was made then, after an assessment, that we would not renew the contracts of Eileen and Colin. And that was taken to board for approval, and then a conversation happened between me and Colin on the night of the board, same with Eileen, and it was very clearly laid out there would be no renewal of contract.
And David, how were you under the impression that Colin had walked when Margaret had a conversation and to say his contract would be renewed and he wanted to stay?
Thank you. Just to echo Mark's comments about, you know, gratitude to Colin for his time with the association. In terms of the exchange that I had with Colin, it was very clear that Colin's contract had not been renewed. It couldn't have been any clearer. I suppose, confusion or maybe the question mark is around, at that time, we were made aware by his agent that Colin had other suitors, and this was when he was in, I suppose, the job market per se. We were always open to whoever was appointed as head coach, considering Colin as a number two, but it's always most important for the head coach to have that choice and that opportunity to appoint their own number two. So the exchange I had with Colin was very clear that while we as an association would welcome the opportunity to work with him in the future, there's no contract at the moment, but subject to who comes in and whether or not they would express an interest in Colin as being their number two, we would be open to it. And that is simply how the conversation played out.
John?
Yeah.
Carla, apologies if we just touch on this for a moment because we lose speaking to you at length, but Mark, how do you react to Colin's assertion that he turned down the job as manager of Cove Ramblers because of an assurance from you that he would be kept on post the November playoff?
Yeah, look, my conversations with Colin, as I've said consistently, that there would always be a review that's consistent with others, and I assured him that after the Wales games, if we qualify, of course there would be no need to have a conversation because we would be in Switzerland competing in the Euros. If we didn't qualify, then we would do a review and we would look to make a quick decision. That was also communicated with Eileen, but that would be informed by a review that's very consistent to others. And we made that process very quick and swift, but comprehensive and thorough, and then made the decision and communicated as clearly and as quickly as we could do.
David, finally at this point, you were adamant that Colin was mistaken in his assertion that you believed he was leaving on his own accord.
Yes, that is a misunderstanding by Colin. We could not have been clearer that his contract had concluded. The belief I had was that he had a genuine opportunity elsewhere, and while he could have sat back and waited to see what head coach was appointed and take his chances as to whether or not he would be considered for a number two, I expressed that I would understand if he did take another opportunity because it was a risk for him, and that was simply the correspondence that we had.
Thank you. Calvin Billy. Mark, I know you talked about the conversation being confidential. Colin has publicised that conversation, so that ship has sailed. Do you dispute this version of events, or as Colin is describing to the hackers?
like I said, like we reiterate, like Colin was an employee of the association, so like any employee of the association, we don't get into talking about details publicly about that.
Those details are already public, though.
Yeah,
so that's people will be wondering, do you believe they're accurate, or is Colin not telling the truth?
That's their decision to do that. I said very clearly that consistently throughout all of those conversations, it was very clear, like we've done with other processes that you know, and all of the people in this room know, that we've done a review at the end of the campaign, and that would be then collated, would inform our decision to then go to the board to seek approval for that decision. And that was very clearly communicated all the way through.
It seems like Colin is a different version of events. If you're not going to dispute this here, I think it's fair for everyone to infer that he's being accurate.
You're trying to get me to say a certain thing, Gavin. I would say, like, we consistently communicate that it would be a review. So any interpretation of assurances were their interpretation of that conversation. And I was always very clear that there would be a review after the campaign had finished and a decision would be made from that information.
It's a heck of a misinterpretation on Colin's part to turn down the Cobra Andrews job, based on that. Given, as we know, how that job would have suited his personal circumstances at the time.
We were clear in communication with him and his agent that we wouldn't have stood in Colin's way, gave permission for Colin to speak to the club. It was his choice to turn down that opportunity.
And David, I'm quite confused as to how there's been a misunderstanding between him and your messages too. Can you clarify what was the content of this message that you sent him? I know you're talking about it's his choice to take over the roles. This was sent on December 12th after he left. Well, there was no question of taking another role. The Cobra Andrews job was gone that point.
So this was a separate opportunity that we were made aware he had been approached about. And given he was out of contract with the association, while I, on a personal level, enjoyed working with Colin, even though we didn't get to work particularly closely, I was very open to him being involved in Irish football moving forward, and obviously...
But he's gone at this point.
Yes, but so his contract had concluded, but as I outlined a couple of minutes ago, had he wanted to wait to see who was appointed as the head coach, he could very well have been considered as a number two. But we would never have forced a number two on a head coach. So it was his volition to choose whether or not he wanted to explore another opportunity, and I was simply wishing him the best.
Okay, so he's misinterpreted your comments.
Yes.
Okay.
Colin, just wrap up there. The questions are which move on to other people now, please.
Yeah, interesting stuff from that press conference indeed. Hopefully our Colin Healy, the melancholic man, finds a brilliant job elsewhere. Colin, of course, the former manager of Cork City, and there's plenty of love for him within the Cork footballing fan base. That's all we have time for here on the Big Red Bench on Cork's Good Times Red FM. Feels like we're almost ending on a bit of a somber note, but Dan Casey signing off. Marty Guilfoyle is on the way next.